it's time for real fashion on Pop Off with Mary Jane Pop.
Well, we've made it to another Monday. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Just to let you know, this is going to be the last week that Pop Off is going to be on with you. But we're going to make it a smashing week with a lot of wonderful, wonderful guests that are just going to blow you away. I absolutely make a promise to you on that, including today. If you've been job hunting and job searching, you probably say, I just don't know what to do anymore. I can't find a job. All the jobs are going overseas. Well, we're going to find out on Pop Off today if there are any good jobs left, and if so, how to get them. And if you can't find a job here, maybe you can start your own way of making a job for yourself. I mean, we've got some great tools for you. Also, the lady that we're going to talk to a little bit later in the show, she is phenomenal. This is the lady that wrote the book Angel Watch, The Evolving Woman, Wings of Destiny, Romancing the Stone. Remember, there was a movie made out of that with Michael Douglas. And also A Jewel of the Nile. I mean, just an unbelievable book. She's done radio and television for years and years and years. Well-known, inspirational speaker. Catherine Lanigan is going to join us today with her latest book called Divine Nudges. And she talks about the angels and angelic intervention. And, you know, I am a believer, so we're going to be talking with her. Also, if you are into a relationship or think you might be, well, you've got to listen to Paul Moses. Paul and Emily are relationship experts. Again, been on all the major shows. They're regulars on all the shows to come back and talk about relationships from their book. Are you ready for this? I love the name of the book. Opposite Schmopposite. And it's true. They say opposites might attract, but it's the ones who have their own way that complement each other. So we're going to find out exactly what that's all about. See if that chemistry is what really counts, or if it's a lot deeper than that and a lot more exciting than that. But first, before we do that, you know, it's Monday, and I always call it Scary Monday because we've got a whole week ahead of us. We don't know what's in store. We've got to make plans. Well, if you're making plans, then hold off. Don't do it till... Hey, Monday, Monday, blow me away. What's the week to be? Well, our psychic numerologist, Esther Baer, knows. She's got our numbers. Hello, Esther.
Yeah, I'm Mary Jane.
Please tell me it's going to be a good week. Please, please, please.
Well, it's going to be okay. Nothing to get excited over.
Oh, really?
Our big concern is the whole month. The whole month is we're accident prone, so we have to go real slow this month. No running around crazy.
Okay, the whole month?
Mm-hmm.
That's too long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's time to slow down and pay attention and watch out for things out there because it's, you know, everything is strange, and we already know that because the whole last 2 years have been strange. And in our completion cycles, we have to pay attention so we can get rid of stuff we don't need. So there's good things coming because of it.
Okay.
But there's also, if you don't pay attention, there's bad things coming. And the bad thing is accidents and health-related problems, so that we have to really watch the whole month.
So tell me tomorrow's going to be a good day. Tomorrow's my birthday. I want to go around and run around crazy.
Oh, that's right. Happy, happy. Oh, it's a money day tomorrow.
Really?
It's a good power money day.
Ooh.
Take control and just be in charge of your life.
Perfect. Love it.
And you match the universal cycle, so it's a double money day. So it's good, and you can go out and make money. You have to watch it, though, because it's a day that you can lose a lot of money if you do it wrong.
Ooh,
so
okay.
It's a day if you wanted to gamble, you play games of skill, not chance, and know when to walk away from the tables.
Oh, is there like the old song, know when to hold them and know when to fold them?
You
huh?
Betcha.
Gotcha.
You betcha. So if you're a gambling crazy person, just know when to walk out the door when you have that big bank account.
Now, you also said that we have to kind of be very careful about health. In
oh,
what
yeah.
way?
Any health-related problems, if you're having a problem, don't try to doctor yourself this month. You go to a doctor. If something doesn't feel good, because this is a month where your intuition is working very well.
Okay.
So if, you know, you've kind of been feeling a little lax and don't quite know what to do about it, and, you know, whatever you're doing is not working, just don't mess with it. Go to the doctor. Go
good.
Get a checkup. Find out what's going on. And, you know, if you catch it, When the urge strikes you, most of the time you can handle it and get over it.
Oh,
if you
good.
Wait too long, it can turn out to be a major serious problem.
Hmm. Are any certain people more susceptible to this health thing, or is it just kind of a general thing?
Well, this is a general. See, everyone has their own specific numbers that work every day. What we do is the universal numbers that everybody picks up.
Uh-huh.
So my day is different. I'm 2 days behind everybody else. You match whatever everybody's doing. So you have a double good or a double bad or a double indifferent. So you match, so that if we're having a bad day for everybody, your day could be twice as bad.
So I have an Excedrin headache when it comes to mine.
Oh, yes. You have the big one.
Gotcha.
Where everybody else might have a little one because something else is working with that that either can help it or hinder it.
Well, I've never been known to do anything halfway. You know
what I mean? Oh, no. No, you do it 100%. See, since I'm two behind, my moth does not say I'm accident prone. Mine says I want to run around crazy. But the universal cycle says you got to go slow because you're going to hurt yourself. And that combination, and every time I hit that combination, I usually have a little stupid accident. Because I want to go fast, and the higher-ups are going, you can't do that.
Yep.
Now, we'll let you out the door, but you can't go fast. So I have my two little guys fighting with each other.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
So I go out the door, but I just go slower.
Now, if people want to get a hold of you and find about their own personal little thing, you know, what's going to happen in their lives, because obviously, as you said, everybody has their own numbers.
Oh, you betcha.
How do they get hold of you?
They can call me at 916-427-8727.
Again, that's 916-427-8727?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, now take it easy this week, because you've got a slower week on a couple of
days. I go very slow. I know this combination, and I know what it does to me. So I go very, very slow.
Well, you be good. You have a wonderful week.
Oh, you too. And tell everybody that the worst day this week is coming up on Sunday, so everybody needs to go slow on that day.
Go slow, enjoy, stay home.
Oh, you too, sweetie.
Okay, take care, love.
Oh, you too.
Great.
Bye-bye.
It's going to be a great week on Pop Off, because we always make it that way. Okay, coming up, I promised you a guy and a gal. Now, I think it's going to be only Paul with us on the line today, but believe me, this combination of Paul and Emily Moses, they have a book out that is absolutely phenomenal, and it's great information. The name of the book is great. It's called Opposite Schmopposite. And the reason is, they say opposites attract, but is that the way to a very good relationship? Well, we're going to check that out on Pop Off. So get your pencil and paper out. You're going to take notes. I don't care if you've been married 5 years, 10 years, or you're just into a relationship. This is one you don't want to miss.
Okay, I can hear you.
Do you want your marriage to last forever? Then you need to ask any partner that you have, doesn't make any difference, one vital question. And that vital question has to be asked before, I say before, you get married. Now, celebrity relationships experts Paul and Emily Ann Moses have found the secret to landing a lasting relationship in their new book called Opposite Schmopposite. And I'm telling you, according to both of them, opposites attract, but compliments last. Now, we're going to find out what that means. Hi, Paul. Nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Hello. How are you today?
I am so fine, but, you know, the burning question now, after I did that tease and told everybody about you and what you and Emily do, what's the big cue? What's that big question?
You want the question right away off the top.
Yeah, let's go for the let's go for the jugular.
Question is, once I know who I am as a person at my core, does my partner match me in every respect?
Ah. Now, but what about all this thing about opposites attract and it's a good combination, so you're all different?
Well, we never say an opposite, schmopposite, that opposites being in a relationship together is a good thing. In fact, opposite, schmopposite busts that myth that a relationship between opposites as all of us have been taught in the past, is a good thing. It's not. A relationship between someone who compliments you is a relationship that's going to last. A relationship between opposites is going to be painful, difficult, and a nightmare, and nobody wants that.
And, you know, I think that question, though, it should be at the top, because we have to know ourselves and understand ourselves first before we can find out what we want in someone else.
Well, you're absolutely right. And if you think about it, you do that when you purchase an automobile, for example. You find out everything you can find out about the model and the options and the features and the dealer's price and the invoice. You go to the Internet and look it up on one of a host of sites. I mean, you know everything there is to know before you walk into that dealership. Why on earth wouldn't you go through the same level of preparation when you're going into a marriage?
You know, I think it's because it's the advertising, it's the magazines, it's the movies, it's television that says, oh, it's all got to be that chemistry. Well, chemistry lasts, what, maybe the first year, year and a half, and then what do you have left?
Well, in a relationship between opposites, it doesn't last very long, but we have been privileged to coach many relationships now between compliments, and the spark in those relationships goes on and on and on and on. In fact, it's as exciting for the partners 10, 15, 20 years into it as it was, you know, the first year or two or three. But I do agree with you that these pop authors and pop magazine articles out there are trying to oversimplify something which cannot be simplified. That is, who are you as a person in what Emily Ann and I have identified as five core relationship categories? You can't simplify yourself in the 2 minutes it takes you to go through the checkout line at the supermarket. Don't try.
You know, it is great. Now, how long have you and Emily been married?
Emily Ann and I have been together too long to count. Enough to have four kids, I'll tell you that much.
That's pretty long. Well, I think, you know, because we've talked before, that Rick and I have been married for 35 years. And you're right. It has to be something that counts as a friendship, as someone I want to just be with. I don't have to have necessarily sex, or I don't have to be talking to him. Just being there counts.
I totally agree with that, and there is an emotional ease to being in a relationship with your compliment, and that's what we write about in Opposite Schmopposite. It's what we have found uniformly that people want for their relationships. It's just a matter of knowing how to get it and then getting it.
Now, the five core relationship categories, these are really important because it kind of covers the gamut. And the first one, as we've kind of talked and alluded to, is sex and intimacy. You have to be
right
on the same page, right?
You absolutely do. We'll call it sex for, you know, but intimacy, of course, is part of that. It isn't just the physical relationship between people.
You bet.
It is also what it means to you, how important intimacy is. You know, there are lots of ways to be intimate without having sex, as we all know. And so sex certainly is the first category, and I would be willing to bet you that very few of our listeners, unless they heard me when you so kindly invited us on before, haven't sat down and written on paper what they believe in their hearts and minds regarding sex. They don't do it. They don't do their homework about themselves first, and you have to know yourself before you can know what you're looking for in a relationship. It's a must.
Oh, but Paul, it'll all work out after we get married. He'll change, she'll change, they'll want kids,
right.
They'll want...
Mary Jane, it'll change, he'll change. And you know what, if he doesn't change, the magazine article teach me that I have to help him want to change.
There you go.
You know what I mean? This stuff is absurd.
Yeah.
And it does a couple things. And, you know, in the time we have this afternoon, the first thing it does is it gives you false hope. Well, if this relationship expert in this magazine that I've bought all my life tells me he can change, well, it must be true. And then if this magazine author tells me that I have to be the one to make him want to change, well, then it's up to me.
Yep.
And when he doesn't change, whose fault is that? Television, some of these talk shows, these magazine articles, the Internet teach you that it's your fault.
Yes.
And that's just not true. It's plain as plain can be.
And
somebody cannot change who they are as a person in the five core categories. They cannot. Don't even try.
And that second category is really important because I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is the number one reason for breakups. It's not sex. It's not communication. It's money and finances.
That has a lot to do with it. Too often these days, especially with gas prices being where they are and mortgage rates and interest rates being where they are, there's a lot of pressure on families when it comes to money, and a lot of pressure on singles when it comes to money as well. And by singles, I mean people who haven't been married before, as well as single parents. And that kind of pressure only adds to the stress you feel in a relationship. And again, if you don't know what your partner's core values are with respect to money and finance, or what your core values are, you're going into this thing blind. You might as well just, you know, point your finger at the next car you see driving down the road and go buy it and hope for the best. It's no different in your relationship. You're rolling the dice, and it'll never work that way.
Good point. Now, this one kind of surprised me when you had this in there, but after I thought about it, it makes sense. It's religion / morality, but it's not necessarily a specific religion that you're talking about. It's an attitude.
That's absolutely right. It's a place where faith falls in your heart. There are people of different religions who can share the same faith, if that makes sense. You understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah, and spirituality.
Just because you call it one thing, or you go to a particular building on a particular day of the week, that's not faith, that's religion. So in these times especially, you can have a relationship work where there is a shared faith between the partners, but what am I going to say, ready? You got to know what your faith is before you get into the relationship so that you can learn about what your partner's faith is and see if there is a compatibility there. Remember the one question. Now that I know who I am at my core, does my partner match me in every respect? You can't compare the two if you don't know the answer to who you are and who your partner is.
Good point. Now, communication does come in there, though, right?
It does. Communication is a big part of it because, again, what good is knowing everything there is to know about your core values if you can't communicate them to your partner? And the follow-up point to that is that if you don't know who your partner is as a person, it doesn't matter what you say, how you say it, because you don't understand your audience. You don't understand the person to whom you're speaking. So it's critical to know who you are, and it's critical then to know who your partner is, or else you're not going to know how to get your needs met because you won't be able to express them. I think that makes a lot of sense.
It does. It makes big-time sense. And the last one makes even more sense because I can't tell you how many people I've asked, you know, before you got married, did you talk about whether you want kids or how you're going to parent if you do want kids or your family values? And they look at me like I'm a crazy person, you know?
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. And it's more than that. It's not just whether to have kids. It's also how to raise them, how to discipline them, whether to educate them privately or publicly. And many of these issues, not only the issues of parenting that we're talking about, but communication, sex, money, and religion, are so important for the blended families out there and for the divorced parents that are looking to be in another relationship either soon or down the road. Mm. You've got to know what you're getting into with respect to the kids that you're bringing along or bringing into the world. I think it's just a fundamental responsibility that we all have. And in opposite schmopposite, it's different than what's on the internet and in those checkout aisles because we don't just say it and put the pressure on you to figure it out. We'll actually spell it out for you and give you homework assignments that are easy and fun to do where you get to learn this stuff and apply it to your life, not just go along blindly and hope your world gets better.
Good for you. You know, I'm a firm believer, and I've said this before, even with people who want to have kids, we should license them. We license everybody. We license doctors and lawyers. And the most important job in the whole world, raising kids, we don't license. I also think we need to give a test, and I don't mean only a blood test, before they get married.
Well, while those two things may come about someday, for where we are right now, knowing who you are as a person is the single easiest, painless, no needles, way to find out what you're getting into or what you're into in your relationship. And we have seen the changes in relationships happen in such short period of time. If you're single right now or you know, a single mom or dad looking to be in another relationship, once people have absorbed what we offer in opposite schmopposite, it on average is about a month before Mr. and Mrs. Right Forever comes along. And that's a special power for everybody to have, to be able to change their lives, not maybe, but definitely and quickly as well.
You betcha. Now, you've got a website, so tell them about the website.
Sure. We list all those categories that we talk about. We list excerpts from the book, how to contact us and buy it, of course, at oppositebooks.com. Oppositebooks.com. We know so few people can spell opposite schmopposite over the radio. Yeah, we've tried to make it easy by making it oppositebooks.com.
You know, I'm glad you've done that, but I love the name Opposite Schmopposite because it fits exactly what you're talking about.
Well, thank you very much. We've been very privileged to get endorsements. Obviously not just from you, but from, you know, many well-known celebrities and talk show hosts out there like yourself. And the title is always the first thing that they comment on. And, you know, again, we're privileged to have that catchy title, but although opposites are going to attract, they're not going to last.
You got it. And I'm looking forward to having you and Emily both back again. Would you come back?
Absolutely. We'll come back and do anything we can do to support your show. You have our word on that.
Fantastic. Keep up the good work. Lord knows we need your help.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us again. Take good care.
Take care, and give my best to Emily Ann.
I shall. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Again, that's oppositebooks.com. But the name of the book is great. Opposite Schmopposite. I mean, what better? And it's true. You have to know yourself. Remember the old saying, know thyself. Don't wish for something that it could be coming true for you. But if you have it set down in writing, in black and white, this is who I am. These are my values. And he lists the five core values. Those are the basics. And you can go into, I'm sure, much more detail even than that. But at least those core values, if you know who you are, then you know who you want to have in your life. It's not a crapshoot. A marriage is a very, very, a relationship is a very, very special thing. Don't take it lightly and don't throw it away lightly. You know, more ways than one, we are alike on Pop-Off. And being alike, we want to make sure that the two match so that you stay together forever. So again, that's oppositebooks.com. Name of the book, Opposite Schmopposite. And that's Paul and Emily Ann Moses. Great guys and gals. I mean, they're terrific in what they talk about. Okay, do angels exist? Is there divine intervention? All these questions will be answered by a lady who has the divine nudges. We'll find out what that means momentarily on Pop-Off. Do you know yourself well enough to know if you have some angels that are hovering around trying to help you out, trying to get us through each and every day? Do divine interventions gently nudge us along in our lives to where we're meant to be? Well, Catherine Lanigan, author of Romancing the Stone, Jewel of the Nile, Wings of Destiny, Angel Watch, and now Divine Nudges, tells tales of angelic intervention. And she says angels are all around us performing miracles, big and small, every single moment. Most of them we don't even know about. Catherine, what a pleasure to have you back. It's been such a long time since you and I have talked.
I know, Mary Jane. This is great.
It's so positive because everything that you have written about, and we've talked to each other all the way back to probably, what, about 1995, 96, 97?
Oh, I think, yeah.
And, you know,
absolutely.
Every time you write a book, it gets deeper and deeper into this whole thing about angels because they are there. They're all around us, aren't they?
They really are.
We call them, though, good luck, coincidence, mishaps, baloney.
No, it's not, and it's not, I mean, it's not an accident. There's a saying that goes, there are no accidents with God. And I think that that's absolutely true. Certainly my life has proven it true. And the more I go around and speak to people, I just did a rash of book signings in Chicagoland area and Indiana and Michigan, and the stories that I heard. You know, I always keep thinking, I can't find another story to top the one I just heard, and there always is one.
Now, we got to tell them, you actually had a near-death experience yourself, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It was, which is the core reason that prompted me to write another angel book, you know, to spend the time to do one more. And mine was about 15 years ago, and I... I was not clinically dead like you and I had discussed before. As my father, when he had his near-death experience, which is in Angel Watch, my first book on the subject, he was actually dead for 20 minutes.
Wow.
Before they, I mean, they banged on his chest. They broke all of his ribs, his sternum, his clavicle. I mean, he was mush.
Yeah, oh, my gosh.
They brought him out of it. Now, I was not, I was on the operating table, but I was not clinically dead like he was. I mean, where they, I mean, my blood pressure dropped, but I wasn't, like, off the charts, flatlined and all that.
Right.
But anyway, the first thing I saw in my near-death experience was this huge angel, and like about 20 feet tall or 25 feet tall. It was as if I were looking up at the top of a huge church.
You know, not a cathedral, but a church anyway.
Very high, and I thought that's the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you think big, Catherine.
Yeah, it was big. And I said, "Who are you?" And he did not give me a name. A lot of people have asked me, well, did they give you a name? I said, no. And I said, who are you? And he said, I am here to give you strength because you have none. And I knew he didn't mean physical strength. I mean, I was having problems. I had a, it was a hysterectomy I was in the hospital for, and I had a tumor the size of a four-month fetus, but I knew that wasn't what he was talking about. I knew what he meant was my emotional strength, my inner strength. I needed real, hardcore strength, and not just to deal with my physical issues, but my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're right. I have none. And he said, well, I am here to do that for you. Mm-hmm. And he said, and then he said, I want you to touch my wing. And I just thought, I can't do that, you know. I said, no, I'm not going to touch your wing. He said, no, that will be your job, is for you to tell people that I am real. I am flesh. I am bone. I'm a real being. And so I did. I touched his wing, and I felt the skin and the feathers and the heartbeat, and the top bone of the wing itself was just like a steel girder. I thought, my God, this thing could fly anywhere. I mean,
wow.
Through the universe, it could, you know, it could go anywhere. This such so much strength. So the being itself was this epitome of strength. Everything about him, I just felt like he could create worlds, much less fly to them. You know, he was so strong. Well, anyway, he had me climb on his back. And we flew, like at warp speed, like right out of a movie, you know, Star Wars or Stargate or something.
Uh-huh.
And we flew to this place, and I don't know how to describe it other than say it was like a planet. It was a real place. It wasn't, you know, just light and air. I mean, there was actual ground that uh-huh. you could touch on, but now it wasn't dirt. That's one of the first things I thought to myself is, my God, there's no dirt here. But it was solid. It was a matter to it.
Uh-huh.
And There were two distinct worlds in this place. And the first one was very natural. It was natural flowers and rolling hills and grass and clouds in the sky and a beautiful sunset. I mean, the sky was lavenders and pinks and oranges and tangerine and gold. It was in colors like I'd never seen.
Wow.
They were the colors we have here, but more enhanced.
Uh-huh.
Is the only way I could explain it. So anyway, then there was a river, and I said, do I have to walk through the river to, you know, like wash my sins or something like that? He said, there are no sins here.
Really?
Uh-huh. There are no sins here. And, but I was fascinated with the water because it was moving. It was moving like from my left to my right, like north, I felt like east to west or whatever, but it wasn't rapid moving, but it was moving. And I put my hand down into the water to touch the water.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things that I always ask people if they say, oh, I had a near-death experience. But really, what was the water? The water is not water. It's mercury.
Mercury?
Because I could look down and see my reflection. And I thought, wow, I sure can see myself awfully clearly.
Huh.
Because it was a mirror. You know, mercury is just a mirror. Mirror reflection. And I've talked to several other people that have had near-death experiences, and there are other places where there's actual water, but right there, I've had, I'll bet a half dozen people say to me, "What was the water?" And I'd say, "Oh, so you really have been there."
So how did this experience change you?
It changed me in several ways, because when I got to the other side, which is an even longer story, and you should read the book to find it all out, is I was literally told that my job from now on was to chronicle angelic intervention in human life. I was supposed to write it down, not just what happened to me, but I was, but that was going to be my mission, if you will. My mission for the rest of my life was, I mean, it's great that I, because I still like to write my novels. I mean, every day I get up and go, "Oh man, that'd make a good story."
Yeah, really. Fantastic.
It doesn't go away. But at the same time, I have this ongoing mission, and it's not my place to be the priest or the minister, or I'm not coming at it from a theological point of view.
No,
I'm coming at it from the point of view of there are all these people out there, and everyone who's listening, you know who you are. You haven't told anyone your story. You may want to share your story, but you just don't want to use your name. Well, I'm the vehicle for that.
Well, you know what, Catherine?
Yes.
I've got to share something with you. This happened to me about 2 years ago, and it's been a little longer than that since you and I have talked.
Yes.
And this I'll just share it very briefly. But I was having nightmares one night. And I don't know if you remember, there was an old movie, like around 1954, that had Robbie the Robot in it.
Oh,
right. There was this man on this foreign planet. It was like Mars. But he would have dreams, and in his dreams he would have this nightmare monster that would come out, had no shape, no form, it changed. It was like a shape changer.
Right,
And it would come through to the ship, and it was hurting people, and it would come, and it was electricity that would zap it, and it would change form. And that thing was chasing me.
Wow.
And I startled. I got up, and I said, "Oh, my God." I said, "This is weird. I've never had anything like this in my life, because I don't even remember my dreams." And I remembered this one vividly.
Uh-huh.
And all I said was, "Please, my angels, Michael, whatever, please, I need your help. I want to lay my head down and go to sleep, and I can't. I think this thing's going to chase me again."
Right.
I laid my head on the pillow. Immediately, I went to sleep, and I felt like it was like soft angel wings coming around me. And I'm getting chills now.
Wow.
It was like the wings up against my cheeks, and I just fell to sleep, and nothing. I woke up the next morning just so refreshed. But I felt those wings, those soft white wings.
Yes. See, that really happened. You know, you made a very important statement. You said, "I don't remember my dreams." And that's the thing that I've found, that there's a criteria for people who say, "Well, it was just a dream." And if you're not really sure, there is a criteria. Number one is, while your dream, a lot of people will say, "Well, I'm not really sure if I was awake or if I was asleep." There's a sense of doubt about whether I was awake or asleep.
No, there was no doubt.
Number two is that while the dream is happening, it is so real. Every part of it, the bad part and the good part, it's very real. You had that.
Yes.
The third thing is that there is some kind of knowing that the angel is there, a feeling, a sense of touch, or a profound feeling of unconditional love. There may be sight. You actually see the angel. Sometimes you will actually smell maybe roses or something. But there'll be some other, there'll be one of the senses is touched besides just feeling that you're in a dream. And the fourth thing is that you never, ever forget it.
Oh, no. I mean, that was so profound to me. And I probably did a little out of sequence, because I felt those wings as I was falling. I mean, I wasn't asleep when I felt those wings.
I believe that. I absolutely believe that.
And I know, because it was like, I'm starting to feel so relaxed. Those wings are around me. You know, they're up against my cheeks. And then I fell off to sleep, and it was the most peaceful sleep I'd had in a very, very long time.
See, and that was necessary as well, because that's another one, is that a sense of unbelievable peace or unconditional love or both, but almost always one of the two is there. It's you're given that angelic intervention to save you. And the more that I investigate this and listen to stories from other people and things happen to me, the more I wonder is, like, when you were being chased by that demon or being or nightmarish thing, is You know, are we traveling to another dimension while we're asleep? You know, are these things actually really happening to us? I know there are dreams that we have that are symbolic, that are supposed to be about our mental state and all that kind of thing. But there are these other dreams that are nightmares, that are very frightening. And is that another place we actually go that we travel to, our minds travel to, or our spirits or soul or something?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. That's not my job. I'm not a physicist, and I'm not a quantum physics professor, and I'm not a theologian. I just write down what real people went through.
Wow.
And that's what I'm right now. I'm working on my third book.
Oh, really?
And I'm about three-fourths of the way through. So if any of your listeners have stories and they want to email them to me, I have an email. It's called angelwatchshow@hotmail.com.
Angel Watch Show?
Uh-huh. Angel Watch Show at hotmail.com. And anything, especially if anyone has had, it doesn't even have to be a near-death experience. It can be even a deep meditation, because I've found out that people can get there that way. If you've seen what you believe is the Crystal City or the Diamond City, heaven, or have been told that this is paradise, if anybody's seen the city, I'm really interested in that. Now, I saw Crystal City in my near-death experience.
Now, why is it that we all have such different ones, though?
Well, you know what's interesting is that I'm finding out that almost everybody, they're actually really all seeing the same place. They're just facets of the same thing. I've got a half a dozen unbelievable stories about the Crystal City. And I didn't know it until after I had my near-death experience that Danion Brinkley, that's what he wrote about in his near-death experience. Mm. And he's had three now. But he's the first one to have written about the Crystal City. But I didn't know that until maybe 5 or 6 years after I had had my own near-death experience. I don't think he wrote it until after, you know, mine.
It's just so amazing to know that, you know, this life is just a step off, you know. And unfortunately,
really
we put too much credence in this one because there's a whole lot on the other side.
You know, when my father was dying, and this story is also in Angel Watch, the two books in the series are Divine Nudges, Angel Watch is first, then Divine Nudges, and the second one's going to be called Divine Nudges 2.
Okay.
But he said, this was 3 days before his death, and he was in one of those hospice care units in the hospital. I mean, he literally was there dying. Now, he was on no drugs at all. He would not even take a Tylenol for the pain. He had congestive heart failure. So he was all swollen up and stuff. He was not delusional. He was not hallucinating. He was clear brain. And I said to him, Daddy, why don't you take something for this pain? And he said, because I want my children and my grandchildren to know that I was clear-brained until the moment that I died. He said, you know, he said, I'm having a difficult time speaking, can't breathe that well, but my brain is working. And he said, I live between the worlds. You think that this world, the earth, is reality, but it is not. It is the dream.
Really?
Our real life is on the other side. Now, my dad was a dyed-in-the-wool Catholic. And if anyone knows Catholics, they're very precise about the fact that when you die, you go to heaven. You don't go to paradise. That's what Protestants believe in. And because Catholics are very big on semantics. I think
well,
it's hilarious.
You're talking to a Catholic, but I've become
well,
a more spiritual person than the Catholic. I mean, I don't believe in the old man with the scepter and all that anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But he never ever called it the other side until he had his first near-death experience. He had three altogether.
Amazing.
But his first near-death experience, he said, well, I've been to the other side. And I said, you mean heaven? And he goes, well, that's what, you know, we're Catholics would call that. But it's really called the other side. I mean, he was just so blasé about it.
Gotcha.
When before his near-death, it was, this is the way it is. That's the way we've been taught. We're never going to deviate from that. And boy, did he change his tune.
I loved it. Now, Catherine, I want to let everybody know, you have a website, don't you?
Yes, I do. It's www.mountainzenproductions.com.
Say that again.
Mountain, it's just like the mountain, MOUTANTAIN, Zen, Z as in zebra, EN, productions with an S. .com.
Terrific.
And my two latest books, Divine Nudges, and I have another one coming out in September called Writing the Great American Romance Novel, which is a how-to book. And it's already being pre-sold on Amazon if anybody wants to really know how to get published.
You got it. Well, as a matter of fact, Catherine, you've got to come back again on Pop-Off.
I do.
I mean, and we've got to keep touch this time and not lose touch of each other.
I know. Yes, exactly.
And just keep up the good work because Lord knows we need all the help to keep us going on this side till we reach the other.
Well, we do, don't we?
And you stay well.
You do, too.
And thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Mary Jane.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's Catherine Lanigan. Again, the name of the book is Divine Nudges, but you can find out about her other books, too, and Angel Watch and Destiny, Wing of Destiny. And she's an unbelievable lady. This lady is incredible. Again, her site is mountainzenproductions.com. And if you do have a spiritual, experience that you've had, it's angelwatchshow@hotmail.com. And who knows, you could be in the next book. I've got to talk to Catherine after the show sometime because, man, she is just phenomenal. And these are the kinds of people that we want to have with you on Pop Off to be able to share, to let you know that life does go on and life is not a bad thing. We just kind of experience this one till we go on to the next. There's always someone up there watching us. Sometimes we don't think so, but they are. So talking about someone watching us, or at least watching over us, how about some information about jobs? Are there any good jobs left out there? We begin to wonder with all this outsourcing and all the stuff that's going on with the government. Well, we're going to find out from Bill Hollett. He is an expert. He's going to tell us if there are any good jobs left, and if so, how do we get them? We get a little bit dizzy about all kinds of things, and especially when it comes to trying to make a living these days, you wonder if it's anything out there that we can. Are there any good jobs left? Well, that's the name of the book, and Bill Holland tackles the issue of job evolution, job outsourcing, and the question does remain, what is left for us? Hey, Bill, nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, when we talk about the jobs today, you know, we hear about all this stuff of outsourcing and all the you know, especially mainstream jobs are going away. Are a lot of the blue-collar jobs only going, or are white-collar jobs going away, too?
Well, for sure, white-collar jobs are going as well. And not only that, I think that the pace of white-collar jobs disappearing will continue to pick up. We are just at the beginning of a major sea change in what our world of work looks like. And I'm suggesting to everyone, you need to get ready.
Oh boy, you know, that sounds pretty ominous to me. So how do we get ready?
Well, let me assure you that it is not as ominous as it sounds, though it is very, 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 very important. From the standpoint that we need to make sure, first of all, we understand. That's the first thing. So we don't start flailing about, getting angry at politicians, getting angry at NAFTA. You can do any and all of that if you like. But once you understand, the question is, what can you as an individual do about your own career?
Exactly,
because all
that flailing won't change a doggone thing. We got to change it ourselves.
That's exactly right.
So how do we do that?
Well, you do it by understanding what companies are going to be looking for, what careers are going to make sense, and then understand that you've got to, as an individual, figure out how do you as a person create value? How do you create value so that companies hire you and are interested in making sure that you stay with them? That's what the jobs of tomorrow are going to look like.
Well, I would think, too, that it would almost start with our institutions, the universities, the colleges. Their message has got to change. It's not just because you got a degree, you're going to get a job.
That is exactly right. In fact, one of the products we have coming out in behind the book is aimed at college or high school seniors and their parents. And the name of the degree is, or the name of it is, Now That I Have My Degree, Where's My Job? The answer is that unless you've gotten yourselves ready to in fact be job ready, to be out on the market, you're going to look like all the other college graduates out there.
Yeah, I've told a lot of young graduates this. I get a lot of calls, especially from people who want to be in broadcasting. And I say, you know, it's great to have a degree. Nice, you know, get the theory. Of course, every station's going to be different. Every place you go is going to be different. So get your little butts out of the college and at least do an internship someplace while you're still in college. You put your foot in the door.
Absolutely. And the other advice I would give people is broaden your horizons. Not that being in broadcasting is good or bad, But don't be myopic about what you're doing. You sound like you want to be in the communication business, and there's a lot of opportunities out there and a lot of jobs dealing with communication. And some of those are in the broadcasting business, and some of those are not.
And again, just because you can always come back to what you originally wanted once you're in the loop, but you got to be in the loop.
You've got to get in the loop, and someone's got to look at you and say, if I hire this person, am I likely for my company, for my organization, will I likely be able to advance my interest or the interest of this corporation? And you'll be surprised at the number of people that can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that once you know, it's not that difficult, but you've got to figure out how to do it. And that's why in Are There Any Good Jobs Left, I specifically begin to educate people around that kind of job career management process.
You know, I'm glad you do, and I'll tell you, Bill, you know, I'm not putting down university because I have a PhD myself. But, you know, you're learning from people who've been in the university system for 20 or 30 years, writing books in the system. They haven't been out in the real world. You got to get out in the real world and find out what it's all about.
Absolutely. In fact, when you talk to kids who are going to college, they tell us that 75% of those kids say they are going to college for vocational reasons. That is, they are looking to get themselves ready. Yet the colleges, by their own admission, do a terrible job of figuring out how to get kids job ready. And our kids are now going to very expensive schools, coming out of those schools, and don't have a clue about their own career literacy.
Yeah. Yeah, and they spend a fortune. I mean, it is expensive. It's not cheap to go to college, but you can use it. Don't count on your, and I used to do this all the time. Of course, I was a rebel way back when. But don't count on your counselor to tell you everything that's going to be in life, because they haven't been in the real world either. Find out what the real world is and then direct your life that way.
And my advice to universities is that if those counselors and those faculty members haven't been in the real world, they better start being pretty soon, because parents are going to get tired of paying an inordinate amount of money to get their son or their daughter through the university, only to discover that they are not ready to, in fact, face the job market. That is unconscionable.
Get people who are in the real world to come and at least lecture on a regular basis, give you an idea of what it's like, what you're going to face when you get out there, instead of wait until you get out there and then get slapped over the face.
And that's exactly what's happening now, and it is really not only unfortunate, but universities and colleges are going to be held to task, I predict, very soon because of their failure to do that.
Now, what about the good old-fashioned entrepreneurial spirit? Because we had a lot of that, and still, most of the businesses that are growing right now are not your huge Fortune 500s. It's the little guys.
The Internet is the greatest boon to individual entrepreneurship that has ever been invented. And people, I encourage people to take a look at that. But on the other hand, they need to be realistic about what it is that they can and cannot do. And one of the ways you can begin to do that is to, whatever job you're currently doing, learn everything you possibly can about it. So if the opportunity presents itself, you'll know more about how to run the business than the business you're currently working for. And that's one of the messages that I try to deliver in the book.
Very good point. That is, And again, you've got to look at being original and a little bit more daring than the next guy, because the next guy is just going to be the same as you, and you're just a clone.
And not only is that true, but it is true for people at all levels, from receptionists to CEOs. I tell people about the receptionist that I came across who was known as more than a receptionist. She became known as a tiebreaker because of her ability to be so customer-focused in terms of helping people do what it is that they needed to get done. And so when people began to refer to her, they didn't say she was the receptionist. They said, oh, she's the tiebreaker. If I got a choice between taking my business there or taking it someplace else, I always go to where my tiebreaker is, because she really understands customer service. That kind of value add on your job will pay great dividends in the long run.
Now, what about race and gender in the job search? Does that even matter anymore?
Unfortunately, it does still matter. And again, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is it still matters. But going forward, we fully expect that there's going to be a diminution in the importance of both race and gender in the job market. That's not to mean that there will ever come a time in which they are totally unimportant, but employers can no longer afford to do two things. One, they can't afford to pass over talent because that talent happens to be female or that talent happens to belong to a minority group. And the second thing is, given that it is illegal, the answer to, who wants the headaches? Companies don't have time to fight the government and fight international competition both. So if they can get that by them, they just go ahead and do it. It is not something that I would predict will persist as strongly as it has existed in the past.
I would think, too, that anyone who goes into the job market today, and I think you touched on this a little bit, you have to make yourself more valuable than just, putting the nut in the screw and turning it with a wrench. Find out what's going on around you, because you never know what the possibilities might be.
That's exactly right. And the possibilities are mushrooming out of control. I recently, my nephew, I usually call him because he's a guy, he graduated from college, he now rehabs houses. And I was talking to him not too long ago, and I said, well, where have you been? I've been looking for you. He said, well, I just got back from South Africa. I said, well, what are you doing in South Africa? He says, if you think the apartment and housing market is hot here, you ought to go to South Africa and rehab houses there. I mean, the world we are living in is an international reality, and getting yourself ready to deal in that, I think, holds a lot of promise.
Fantastic. Now, do you have a website?
Yes, I do, and thank you for asking, and I beg your patience. It will be up later this week because we are just starting off, but it is called rwilliamhollandconsulting.com. www.rwilliamhollandconsulting.com, and the name of the book is Are There Any Good Jobs Left? Career Management in the Age of the Disposable Worker.
Fantastic. Bill, thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you'll come back again, because this is going to be an ever-changing subject.
Well, terrific, and I look forward to it. Thank you for inviting me.
Take good care now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Now, again, that's Bill Holland. Name of the book, Are There Any Good Jobs Left? And again, his website, rwilliamhollandconsulting.com. And as I said before, and as always, the books, the websites, whatever, they will all be on the website popoff.com. And please email me if you have any questions about any of the guests or anything that we had on, maryjane@popoff.com. In the meantime, as always, I want you to live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and dare to dream, because dreaming is what it's all about. That's what we're here for. Remember what Catherine said? This is the dream. And then we move on to the reality. The reality will be back again tomorrow, right here at high noon, right here on bbsradio.com. I'm Mary Jane Popp. This is Pop Off. Have yourself the best day ever. You did.